Hello, this is Dr. Susan Kolb, and I'm here with Temple of Health Radio Show, and today we have the pleasure of interviewing Hilary Webb, the author of Traveling Between Worlds, Conversations with Contemporary Shamans. Your book was very interesting, Hilary. We've interviewed a number of the people that you have in your book, but I've not seen such a collection from a wide variety of shamanic traditions. Can you tell us a little bit about how you came to write the book?
Sure, yeah. Well, the book really came about as a result of my own quest and my own questions about what this practice was all about, not just for me, but for the world, for all of us who are kind of interested in these teachings. You know, I got into a place where I'd been involved in studying shamanic practices for a couple of years, and I just, you know, I hit a place where, okay, now after all this time, what do I do with it? What is the value of these teachings? So it was really this opportunity to speak with some people whose work I respect very much, people I had either studied with or read their books, and just have an opportunity to sit down with them and ask them really all the questions that I wanted to know and all the things that I was curious about and struggling with. And it just turned out to be this incredible journey, and it really changed much of how I look at the world and myself and this work. So that was sort of the inception of the whole thing.
Well, one of the things that is interesting to me is the wide range of where these shamanic traditions originate from. You've represented basically most of the world, and have you wondered why the shamanic traditions are so widespread?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly, there are many theories as to why you know, these indigenous traditions tended to be, you know, the original, what would be called the proto-religion or the proto-spirituality. And it is interesting to see how many commonalities there are, whether you're talking about indigenous practices from Africa or from Canada or from Ireland. There really is a very common, lots of common links between it. And I think that's just because when, you know, these practices come from nature-based people, and I think nature has certain symbols, there's certain core elements that are really consistent. So very interesting to see.
And I think one of the tenets of shamanism, the basis on which it's formed, is that all is one, mm-hmm. That we are all part of, I guess, a projection of spirit into the material world. Mm-hmm. And what the shamanic initiations are about is introducing you to the fact that what is in your physical material reality is simply a projection of what's coming through in order for you to do this kind of dance with nature and dance with the things that your soul and spirit had came to learn within the material world.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things I like about the shamanic tradition is there seems to be a very nice balance between physical and spiritual. Unlike, you know, there's some ways of thinking where everything is about the physical and other ways of thinking where everything seems to be more, you know, heavily based in the spiritual. But there's this really beautiful balance between our lives in the physical world and the spiritual beings that we are and that we are a part of.
And I think one thing that many of the people that you've interviewed is showing, and we see this not just in shamanism but in many of the different aspects of consciousness research and spirituality, we're really merging science with spirituality at this point. So many of your authors and shamans have like traditional education, PhDs, MDs, and yet also have the initiatory experience with the shamans that they were guided to study with.
Yeah. Yeah, which is great. I mean, it does, I have to say, it always surprises me the extent to people to which people want to separate the two, because it never seemed to me that we ever needed to separate the two, science from spirituality. They seem to me to go hand in hand. So that's something that's always sort of perplexed me a little bit when people start dividing them.
Well, I think one thing we tend to do in the academic world is ignore the anomalies. Mm-hmm. we don't study the spontaneous remissions. We don't study the strange things like the presidential curse that was put on by a Navajo shaman when Harrison became president. Each generation, the president would die according to the curse, and that was every 20 years. And for seven times, every 20 years, the president either died of natural causes or assassination until it was finally broken by Reagan. I mean, these are part of our history. And the odds of that, that happening, are just very minuscule. And so, if you study history, and you study what happened, and then what the results were, and then you look at Nancy Reagan, who was very much aware of the spiritual world, who was able to break the spell because of her great love of her husband, it's very interesting.
Absolutely. I hadn't heard that about the presidents, but it just goes to show you, I think, that there are these, you know, as physics is showing us, these connections, these energetic connections, and time and space, you know, causality, lineality, not necessarily everything we thought they were, and not necessarily the boundaries that we thought they were.
Well, I think what we need to understand is that intent is very important. A shaman is able to put intent into materialization in a way because they're trained to do so. I mean, that's basically the shamanism training is to take an intent and make it manifest via using the spirit world as a conveyor of that intent. And so what the Navajo did, you've heard of Tippecanoe. Mm-hmm. That was the Battle of Tippecanoe. Harrison led that battle. And so I guess the Navajos were beaten, and the when Harrison went to give his presidential inaugural address, he did so for 2 hours out in the cold, and he got pneumonia and died within 30 days of the presidency, or, you know, of becoming president. And then, but the intent is what is projected. In other words, thought, you know, what Edgar Cayce was saying, that thoughts are things, you know, the mind is the builder, the physical is the result. You can build in your mind an intent, and if that intent is strong enough, it continues in the material world until somebody with a stronger intent, Nancy Reagan, with her love of her husband, she believed the spell. And she took countermeasures to it. And to this day, it's not known what she did, but the results are that although Reagan was shot, he wasn't killed.
Oh, that's
interesting. And then the next 20 years was the younger Bush, and who didn't, as far as we know, did not have an assassination attempt at all. So
right.
The spell was broken.
Right.
The intent was broken.
So yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, that fits in very nicely. I was recently doing some research down in Peru, and I had a conversation with a shaman about sorcery and how sorcery works. And he had a very interesting take on it because he said, you know, he has many people coming to him and saying, oh, so-and-so put a curse on me, and so-and-so is doing this, that, and the other. And he says, well, you should say thank you to that person because it's energy. It's free energy that is being sent to you, and it may be being sent to you with a bad intent, but you can transform that energy and use it for your project. So you say thank you because it's free energy. So there is both that connection between the intent that's being sent out and also what the person who is receiving it does with that. And it sounds like Nancy Reagan had some techniques for shifting that energy, and as the receiver of that intent, she was able to maybe neutralize it or do something with it.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Well, I don't know that we'll ever know what she did or how she did it or if there was another factor involved.
Right.
But certainly what people have to understand is that intent, focused intent, especially with the correct training, is a very powerful thing. And then that's why, you know, the different spiritual traditions teach us to be harmless in our thought, word, and deed, because any malintent that we put toward others can have consequences. And that's the difference between the shaman and the sorcerer, according to your book. The shaman the goal of the shaman is to heal and be in the world and help, and whereas the sorcerer is more likely to be in it for other reasons.
Right. The shaman tends to be a channel for spirit, whereas the sorcerer, you know, I think even with shamanism, there's this interesting balance that goes on between personal will and divine will.
Mm.
And I think the shaman is the one, especially in the Indian tradition, who is able to bring those things together in a way that it's working harmoniously, whereas maybe the sorcerer is working a little more on personal will and less the design of the cosmos.
Which brings us to the topic of the shaman as the guardian of the people that he or she is with. Can you speak a little bit of the traditions and how the in the indigenous cultures the shaman was kind of the caretaker and saw things coming way before the village people did?
Mm. Well, you know, the way I think of it in some ways is the shaman would tend to be and is a master observer and mm-hmm. is in a position both by nature of the job description and also by having certain talents that have both been born with and cultivated of being really aware of what is going on, the patterns that are going on and what is going on in the world and being aware of energetic unfoldings and being able to see where things are out of balance. And then mm-hmm. being, you know, once seeing where things are out of balance, having the tools and the skills and the ability and the knowledge to be able to go into some sort of altered state and through various techniques, practices, be able to, you know, discuss this with the spirit world, be able to manipulate energies in a way that does bring things back into harmonious balance, whether that means with an individual who's facing a health crisis or an entire community that's maybe out of balance in one way or the other. But there's really just that sense of, you know, slowing down, being able to observe what is going on with the individual, with the community, and really having those powers of insight to see what's really happening.
So do we have anybody in our Western society that is doing this with our current crisis, our economic crisis, and our energy crisis, or any of the shamans that you know consulting with their spirit guides to see what needs to be done?
Well, I know, you know, this isn't maybe exactly what you're asking me, but having been down in Peru on Inauguration Day, there was a lot of celebration amongst the shamans, a lot of work being done amongst the shamans to sort of facilitate what's being considered this sort of new era for, you know, not just the United States, but for the world, because for better or for worse, we tend to be very influential in the world. So, you know, people in other places have a big stake in what goes on here. So there really was a coming together in Lima, Peru, on January 20th of many of the medicine people of the area, which I thought was interesting.
That is.
Yeah. You know, and I think that it does, I'm sure it's happening on smaller levels, on smaller community levels. It's hard to say, you know, we're such a big country and we're so filled with so many different people. It's hard to say from the sort of the macro perspective, but I do see it happening on a micro perspective where there are little communities which are really, you know, it's a time of transition. We really are in an exciting time of transition. Like any time of transition, it's going to be challenging and painful, and because it's challenging and difficult, but I think there are people who are working to help usher in this new era that we're coming into, and I think it will be a powerful and ultimately a really positive thing. So,
yes, in your book, the Mayan shaman was speaking about, I think very well, speaking about the 100 years before and 100 years after 2012 and what that meant. And I think it's a very good, I can't remember his name.
Eric Gonzalez.
Okay. I thought his section was very good explanation of what the shift we're going through mm-hmm. and what it means, you know, in terms of society and each of our spiritual paths.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was recently talking to some Andean shamans about this time, and they referred to it and described it as a time of meeting ourselves again. And I thought that was a really beautiful phrase, because we are going to be forced to sort of meet ourselves again, because I think a lot of the things that distracted us and gave us a certain maybe superficial comfort are being taken away from us. So we are having this opportunity to meet ourselves again, which
right.
is difficult, but really wonderful.
Well, the balancing of, I mean, everything eventually comes back into balance. And if, you know, we don't have, I guess, the discipline to bring ourselves back into balance, nature will do it for us.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what the message of many of the shamans are, is that it's better to stay in balance with nature rather than have the more violent things like earthquakes and the volcanoes and everything. Bring the earth back into balance.
Yeah. The question is, do you want to be swept away by the transition, or do you want to be the transition?
Right.
We definitely have the ability to be the transition,
mm-hmm.
you know, if we learn to sort of align ourselves in a more harmonious way.
So what about your own practice? Do you have a shamanistic practice yourself?
I don't. I'm not a shaman, and I don't practice in the way that one would think of in terms of shamanism. I'm fascinated by shamanism because
mm-hmm.
it is, to me, this beautiful way of looking at the world and brings with it these beautiful philosophies and also amazing practices for sort of transcending our ordinary way of looking at the world. And I think it's so important to take time to do that and not get locked into certain perspectives. So in that way, I definitely take advantage of opportunities and practices from that I've learned from the shamans of stepping out away from my own limited self and just playing around with things. I mean, a lot of shamanism is playing around with the boundaries, and that's something that I love to do. So that is definitely part of my life practice. And working with the shamans and writing about the shamans, telling stories about the shamans is part of my work with this path. That's really where I feel like my work is to be done.
Well, for our listening audience, would you like to describe some of the altered states of consciousness that the shamans engage in order to bring back information and knowledge?
Sure. This is where every culture has a slightly different means by which they do go into these altered states. In many cases, there's the tradition of drumming, or chanting, and there's been scientific studies done that repetitive motions and repetitive sounds do shift the brainwaves to create these altered states where you really are able to perceive more of the world than we are when we're in our normal. I think it's a beta state that we're in ordinarily. So those are some of certain ways. There's, of course, in some cultures, the use of medicinal plants that bring you into an altered state and working with the spirits of those plants. Here in the Western world, we've really discovered the power of shamanic journeying, which is a kind of self-guided meditation of a sort where you will meet with your spirit allies and you go into upper, middle, lower worlds and have
mm-hmm.
conversations. And it's really quite an amazing technique of just exploring more of our ability to, you know, we were talking about time and space before, but sort of transcend time and space and causality and transcend our own limited thinking. So those are just a few of the ways that shamans tend to go into these altered states.
And the other important thing to remember is that our consciousness is not limited to our physical body.
Mm-hmm.
And so the shaman sends his consciousness or her consciousness into plants, animals, into anything that knowledge is required of.
Mm-hmm.
And once you send your consciousness into that thing and merge with it, then information about it is available to you. And it's a great way to get out of yourself, so to speak, and become less self-important, which is, in most of the shamanic traditions, getting out of your sense of yourself is very important to progressing in shamanism.
Right, that's a great way of putting it, sure.
And we had interviewed Kenneth Smith on many of his books, and I felt that he was really able to merge our Western thinking with the shaman, I guess the Toltec shamanistic traditions, and bring about a real interesting, synthesis of the two. His latest book, I think, is Awakening to the Energy World or something like that. But that book was really, I thought that was an amazing book.
I think he goes by the name in my book of Ken Eaglefeather. And
right.
Certainly he has some very interesting takes on how we can bring together some of those shamanic perspectives and technology. And he's great to talk to because he really likes to play with things, and he doesn't ever seem, he never seems to say, this is what I think, but he's like, I don't know what I think, but let's play around with these ideas. And for me, that is just sort of the essence of some of what this practice is for me anyway, is, playing around with these ideas and not getting too self-important or fixated on our ideas, but just, okay, let's play with this idea.
And that's very important. I think once you've decided that your way is the only way and that's anybody else who believes anything differently, that's called fundamentalism, and
exactly.
That's gotten us into a lot of trouble.
Yeah, and as Ken says, there is such a thing as New Age fundamentalism. So,
there is, yeah.
We all have to be careful of getting too cemented into some of our own ideas, because I think that's where things start to break down.
And I think that, there are many, many different paths, and I like the advice in your book. I don't remember who gave it, but one that you need to find your own path, but then not get real attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
Realize that it's just a way to connect you with your, your soul or your higher guidance, and then understand that there is no dogma in any of the ways that exist, whether it be any of the traditional religions or any of the shamanic paths or Wicca or anything else that you want to any other path that you want to take.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's why initiations are so important in the shamanic tradition, because in some ways it's the breaking down of these cemented ideas that are kind of crystallizing and tearing you apart. I mean, there's this whole tradition of the idea of dismemberment in the shamanic tradition, where spirit will come and will dismember you on some level, mm-hmm. and then put you back together so that you're, working at a different level. And initiations happen throughout our lives. So I think, that's the value of it, is tearing apart our solidified ideas so that we are able to see more and kind of bring the blinders back a little more each time.
I was shown it one time. I was put between the waking and the dream state, and I was taken back from the waking state back to this point and then into the dream state and then back to that point and into the waking state about 7 times back and forth. And what I was told is that neither state is real. The only real thing is what's behind, which is consciousness itself. Consciousness projects into reality, and then consciousness projects into the dream state. So after that, I realized that waking reality was no more real than my dream reality.
Wow, that sounds like a really powerful exercise.
Yeah, it was neat, because it's kind of through repetition you realize that what's real is whatever the projector is.
Yeah.
And although you couldn't really, experience the projector, you could sense that it was there. You could sense that this reality was projected just as the dream reality was projected.
Mm.
And so consciousness can project through either reality, and that's, there's a whole thing of waking dreaming in shamanism, which is so important in terms of getting messages, and then paying attention to your dreams, the Toltec dreaming body, and the manipulation of the dreaming body is really fascinating.
Yeah.
So all are essentially valid methods for consciousness to communicate with us.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's so many ways.
Yeah.
Just how much are you paying attention or how much are any of us paying attention at the time?
So basically the goal is to get to the point where you listen to that inner voice that is a voice of guidance. And not so much try to manipulate the outside world, because it is no more real than the dream world, but simply be able to be guided. I think that that's the key.
Right, right. And walk that line.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the hard part, isn't it? But very interesting.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, for those of us who enjoy that kind of thing, who kind of enjoy having our paradigm shattered, it's one of the most exciting things out there.
Well, we're going to take a short break, and after we come back, we'll resume the interview. We're speaking with Hilary Webb, the author of Traveling Between Worlds, Conversations with Contemporary Shamans.
So you had plastic surgery. What was it like?
It was great. Don't get me wrong. It was surgery, but the doctors and staff at Plastico's were terrific.
Honey, you look like $1 million. You actually went to Plastico's and had it done.
Why don't you? Plastic surgery is outpatient, and you'll only be out of work a few days. I love what Plastico's did for me, and looking my best is an investment that pays in so many ways. The help you get from the professionals at Plastico's is a bargain.
Plastico's, 770-457-4677. Mention this ad for a free consultation. Financing is available, 770-457-4677. Headaches, back pain, migraines, joint pain, nothing worse than the nagging, unending discomfort of daily aches and pains. If you have pain and are looking for more natural solutions to eliminate your pain, Millennium Healthcare is for you. Millennium Healthcare's professionals will work for you. For help or more information on natural pain relief, call Millennium Healthcare at 770-390-0012. That's 770-390-0012. Millennium Healthcare. Pain relief naturally.
You had plastic surgery, Bill?
You bet I did. I got tired of the wrinkles around my eyes and decided to have Plastico's do something about them.
But I didn't think men had plastic surgery.
Get with it, Bob. Men want to look their best, too. There's nothing wrong with getting a little help from Plastico's to look on top of your game. A lot of guys are doing it, my friend.
Well, I don't know about this.
Look, you see the difference Plastico's made with me. I look better and I feel better. My Plastico's surgery was an investment in me.
So where is Plastico's?
Plastico's is in Dunwoody. Plastico's is staffed by pros who guarantee you personal attention. The Plastico's number is 770-457-4677. Mention this ad for a free consultation. Financing is available. 770-457-4677.
I'm sick and tired of always feeling sick and tired, and I don't want to take a lot of prescription drugs to feel better. Isn't there a better way?
Millennium Healthcare offers natural solutions to your health problems. Millennium Healthcare is qualified healthcare professionals working with you to restore your health and wellness. Whether it's a caring physician, one of our natural providers, or our natural apothecary, Millennium Healthcare can help. For more information, call Millennium Healthcare at 770-390-0012. That's 770-390-0012.
This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. We have a few announcements before we get back to our interview with Hilary Webb, Traveling Between the Worlds. Every week we bring you Temple of Health Radio Show. Next week we're going to be interviewing Stefan Vanal on his astrological karma of the United States. And on the 21st, Stephen Lewis, You Can Heal Anything. And on the 28th, to be announced. We did the show on the 28th last week, so I guess we're going to reschedule that one. Every third Thursday, we have the Noetic Science Meeting at the Dunwoody office. This February the 19th at 7:30, Dr. Neri Ford will give a free lecture on advanced specialty lab testing. These are really remarkable new laboratory tests in order to evaluate intracellular levels of supplements, oxidative states, all sorts of things where you can more rationally and intelligently decide what supplements you want to take. For more information, call 770-457-4677. We have information about our plastic surgery practice, hand surgery practice, medical spa, holistic gynecology, holistic family practice, traditional Chinese medicine, NAIT, allergy elimination, acupuncture, energy medicine, pain management, and permanent makeup on our community health source. For a copy of this, please call 770-457-4677. This is a monthly publication with a lot of interesting information on health topics, as well as the monthly schedule. So, Hillary, thank you for joining us today. Would you like to give some contact information before we continue with the interview?
Sure, absolutely. If anybody's interested in getting more information about me or my book, Traveling Between the Worlds, or my other book, which is entitled Exploring Shamanism, I can be contacted through my website, which is www.hillarysweb.com. That's H-I-L-L-A-R-Y, S as in Sam, W-E-B-B.com.
Great. And you had a special offer for the listeners?
Yes, absolutely. I'd like to give away 3 copies of my book, Traveling Between the Worlds. So I guess, what should we say, the first 3 people to email you guys, I'll send copies to, signed copies.
Okay, great. I guess they can email me at drkolb@mindspring.com. Because I don't think we have an email address for the BBS radio show.
Okay.
But anyway, we were talking with Hillary about various aspects of shamanism. I guess one of the questions I have is what do we have to learn from shamanism in terms of just everyday practices. Not all of us can afford to go to Peru and study.
Mm-hmm.
What are the everyday practical advice we can give to our listeners that come out of the advice given by the shamans?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. I think there's so many different things that can come out of this, because I think for so many people, shamanism holds a little something different. I mean, for some people, it's really a matter of recognizing or remembering that there is spirit in all things, and the value of connecting to nature, just that we need for our own souls to get out and be in nature. You know, for me, the big lesson is to not take reality at face value, frankly, and to not get stuck in what I think is truth. Because I think it's, you know, as I've said a couple times, I think, on the show, I believe that it's when we get too stuck in what truth with a capital T is and cannot let ourselves, you know, go past that is when we really get stuck and we get into trouble and we start making ourselves and everybody else miserable. So just for me, learning a little, not to be so afraid of having a little flexibility and playing with the world a little bit and playing with what truth is and what ideas are and what a reality is. You know, I think it makes life a little more exciting, and it kind of helps me look at myself with a little more flexibility and compassion for myself and everybody else, because it's a very mysterious world out there, and I don't think any one of us has the truth. So, for me, what shamanism has to offer most of all is just that support in exploring the world and exploring ourselves in a very gentle and loving way, and in a way that can make life mysterious and magical and everyday an adventure.
Ken Eagle Feather had a thing in his interview about using death as your advisor. Would you like to comment on that?
Yeah, I love that. You know, again, for me, that's this beautiful realization of we you know, no matter what happens after we leave this world, whether there is some sort of afterlife or reincarnation, We do have a finite time on this planet, and that's exactly how it's supposed to be. And using death as your advisor for me is remembering that not in the frightened way, but in a way that prompts you to ask yourself on a daily basis, how can I best be living my life? What is it that I need to do? What is death asking of me? What do I need to do today so that on my deathbed I'm not saying I had this regret or that regret? And for me, I love that image. Keeps me living really to, you know, my fullest potential in every moment, or I trying to, or at least consistently reminding myself of the things that are important to me in this world. So that's what that means to me.
And the first part of that is just realizing that we are going to die. You know, it's like nobody's really gotten out of this world without dying that we know of. So so that is an important realization right there.
Right.
And realizing that we don't take money or power with us. The pursuit of those is not going to necessarily lead to anything that's useful if there is an afterlife.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And what can we leave here, not just in terms of physical things or books or whatever, but with our family. And remembering that, you know, we have to tend our own gardens first in some ways. And just the power that each person's presence has in the lives of others. So I think that's what lasts beyond our own death.
Right, that's true. And staying in the moment, that's another thing that is taught in all the shamanic traditions. Gazing in the Toltec tradition, the beekeeper, the bee shaman, observing the bee, all of these different exercises to put us in the moment rather than in the past with regrets or in the future with fears or concerns.
Yeah, that tends to be kind of a distinction in some cases of the Western linear worldview versus the more shamanic cyclical view. The linear worldview, we're often focusing on the past or the future. In the cyclical view, it just sort of brings you back into the now, which is sort of where a lot of shamanic practices have evolved from, is that being in nature and seeing how the cycles of nature bring you back to the same place, or at least a place similar to where you were before.
I was interested in the Spirit Walker interview. I had not read that book. Would you like to comment on that?
Yeah, that was Hank Wesselman, and he wrote a book called Spirit Walker. And, yeah, he has some really interesting perspectives on what we're doing now on the planet and how we can be best service in terms of being cultural, what he calls cultural creatives. I think that came from the title of a book that somebody wrote. But in terms of taking some of these ideas and implementing them in the world, and just the power that we all have, you know, as a collective consciousness for dreaming the world in the way that, in perhaps a little bit of a new way, or some sort of way.
Yeah, let's talk about dreaming the world and what that means. I think that might not be obvious to some people. How did the shamans use dream time to explore future possibilities?
Well, what I'm thinking of in particular doesn't necessarily have to do with dream time specifically, because while dream time in terms of our sleep and our dream state is certainly important, in some ways, you know, we're relating to the world. We can relate to the world as if it is a dream. You know, when I mentioned dreaming things into being, the interview with John Perkins comes to mind, because he talks about, you know, before anything can happen, you have to dream it first. I mean, before I can pick up a pencil, I on some level have to be visualizing myself picking up that pencil before I can actually do it. So our dreams have such power because they are the precursor to our actions. So dreams, whether you mean dreams, imaginings that we have as we're walking around about how we'd like things to be, or dreams that we have while we're asleep, or the visions that we have, shamanic journeying, say, have so much power for transforming ourselves, transforming the world. And, you know, it goes back to that whole energetic process of the energy that you're putting out there is much more powerful than we ever believe.
And some of the spiritual teachers say that this this energetic frequency pattern that we're entering into around 2012 is actually a more powerful state of that. In other words, what you're putting out now in dream time, it might be in a dream state or it might just be in meditation, but what you're putting out now in dream time is so much more likely to manifest.
Yeah.
And if you're not putting anything out in dream time, what your concerns, your worries are, your fears are, can also manifest.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you're putting them out just as strongly. Focused intent is something that we learn in spiritual practice and in shamanism, that the intent, the focused intent, is creates much more quickly than the scattered random thoughts that one might have.
Yeah, absolutely. Somebody I was working with once likened it to, you know, tuning a radio, and you can hear sometimes, the not-so-focused intent, you can hear static mostly,
mm-hmm.
you kind of hear the voices behind, and that's sort of where the spirit world takes it. Okay, can't really hear it, but when you get it crystal clear and really focused, then the message comes out clear, and that intent is really out there.
Right.
Yeah. Right. I do think that you're right, that we're in a time of transition, and when you're in a time of transition, there's much more flexibility and ability to shift things. Therefore, what we are creating mentally is going to have a lot more power than maybe at other times in history.
Yeah, one of my hopes is that spiritual medicine will help with our, our healthcare crisis that is so economically burdensome right now, and we can't afford it, according to, the things that are on TV, radio, CNN, everything. We have to come up with better solutions to the healthcare dollars spent. And spiritual medicine is something that is less expensive and probably a lot more effective than some of our older ways of doing things, surgery and drugs.
Sure.
Especially with our difficult diseases.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that there's a lot more spiritual aspects to our to the diseases that are have been elusive in their treatments, like cancer,
mm-hmm.
and that we need to explore that. Shamans are actually very successful in treating cancer and other diseases, and I look at the diseases that they treat and wonder if we're not missing an aspect to them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, completely.
Yeah. And for me, it's sort of also, in addition to what you're saying, goes back to what is our relationship with death? Maybe shamanism has something to teach us about our relationship to disease and our relationship to death, and
mm-hmm.
Maybe not having it seem as such an antagonistic thing that we try so hard to rid ourselves of all disease and all
mm-hmm.
death and to live forever and, we're not, as we were saying, we're not meant to live forever. And, changing our relationship to our bodies and to the inevitable death.
Well, I think a lot of disease puts one in a position where one has to listen to spirit or, one's inner guidance, because you can't do anything else.
Right.
It's
true, yeah.
When you're too weak to get up even to go out to the bathroom, you tend to listen a lot more, because that's all that is. You don't have all the distractions in the outside world to take up your time.
Right, everything gets stripped away in those times.
Mm-hmm.
That's why a lot of shamanic practitioners and shamans are what's been called the wounded healer. They went through dramatic illnesses where they almost
mm-hmm.
died and somehow managed to survive through that. And again, I think it goes back to the initiation idea, where you get all these things that are, mental clutter, maybe get stripped away, and you are
mm-hmm.
left with your connection to spirit.
Well, you can see it then. I mean, it's very obvious, as it's the only thing that is keeping you alive. I had an experience where I had a very severe pneumonia, and was taught a great deal about what my connection is with whatever keeps me alive, because I could see it wax and wane very, very, very easily. And I called up my spiritual teacher and I said, "Am I going to die?" And he said, "No, but you're going to feel like you're going to die."
Now, isn't that the truth? And that's really the value of a spiritual teacher. When,
it is, yeah.
When you feel like you're dying, guess what? You are, but in a good way.
That's right. You're not going to die yet. But
yeah, exactly.
You're going to feel like you're dying.
Exactly. You just feel like it.
But, you also understand what your connection is. It's not your mind. It's not your body. It's something called consciousness. And it's not in this third-dimensional world. I mean, it doesn't originate here. Yeah. And once you realize that, you realize that your consciousness can then be sent into other things to explore, and that's what the shaman essentially does, is send his or her consciousness out to explore different alternative realities, which, including the spirit world, which is, in terms of shamanism, just as real as the third dimensional world is, the world of the spirits, where you can communicate with them and can work with them.
Yeah, absolutely. Many worlds out there.
There are.
Yep.
So, do you have plans for a future book?
Well, right now I'm working on my doctoral dissertation, which is a collection of stories about experiences that I've had with some Andean shamans down in Peru.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully at some point that will also be published in a book for the general public. And so that's what I'm working on right now.
Can you share any of those with us?
Oh, I think I'm going to hold on to that
for
a while. And, you know, just suffice to say, it is a collection of stories about doing field work down in Peru and mm-hmm. some of the explorations I've had, both in terms of some of the ideas, some of the philosophies, mm-hmm. and looking at the philosophy, Andean philosophy, in comparison to the Western philosophy, but also bringing in some of my own experiences with some of the plant medicines and some of the teachings and just playtime with my friends down there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
Is there any other aspect of the book, Traveling Between Worlds, you'd like to comment on?
Sure. One of the things that I enjoy reading this book over and over again. I think I feel like I can say that without ego, because really what it is reading the words of these people that I got mm-hmm. to speak to, and every time I read it over, I get something a little different out of it, which is mm-hmm. so exciting for me. I was really, really grateful to all these different people who took the time to share some of their thoughts, and it just goes to show how, I think, important some of these ideas are, that they're willing to take some time to do this. I mean, you know, I have a rabbi in here who went to the shamanic roots of Judaism, which I still find incredibly fascinating. I have somebody from the Tibetan tradition and somebody from the British Bee tradition, and yeah, I just there's a little something in here for everybody, and it seems to shift every time. I know every time I read it. So it's I'm very pleased to have had the opportunity to be able to share what these people, some of these conversations that I've had with people, because I think they are important for the time we're living in.
One of the shamans was from the Celtic tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my friends is writing a book on the early years of Jesus.
Mm.
And evidently, Jesus was influenced a great deal by the Celtic tradition, as well as the Egypt and the Buddhist traditions, too. And I think it's just interesting that even all of this information is coming out about, the early training of Jesus.
Mm.
There was a story when Jesus was about, I think, 8 years old, and Joseph, his father or his uncle, in different reports, but was the main supplier of tin to the Roman army, so he used to take Jesus with him to England and in the Celtic area, because a lot of the tin was made there. And Jesus got mad at a kid in the village, and the kid fell dead. And so the parents complained to Joseph that Jesus had killed the kid. And so that's when the family realized that Jesus needed some training.
Oh, my goodness. I'd never heard that before.
Yeah, that's your book is Hampton Roads, and her book is going to be coming out in Hampton Roads, too.
Great.
So
great.
You share a publisher. But, great stories about how the Celtic traditions and other traditions influenced some of our current, religious figures such as Christ, and it truly makes one realize that everything is all one, and that there's nobody, no religion, no path that is special,
right.
Which I think is important, because at least the Bible says that you have to give up judgment in order to gain energy. And that's the thing in the Taltic, too, that you have to completely quit judging everything. And then when you do that, you have a tremendous amount of energy that you can use for your shamanic work.
Absolutely. And what you said sort of brings up something for me is that no matter where any of us come from, we mm-hmm. have shamanic roots. So, you know, we can think of shamanism as something that other people do in some other country that's far away in some strange land, this, that. But it really is part of our DNA. It's really part of our legacy, and it's part of our ability as humans walking around on the planet. So it's sort of nice to remember that even if you come from Ireland or Celtic tradition or doesn't matter, there are those shamanic roots there in that lineage.
Yeah, well, all of the different, the very interesting one that I found fascinating was the discussion of the Tibetan shamanic tradition versus the lamas. Where one was given the funeral rites and the shamans were given the healings and the lamas were given the funeral rites because of the, and that's kind of like a merging of the two different traditions.
Right.
Where they learn to get along with one another rather than have one come out dominant.
Yeah, exactly. I think that was Larry Peters' interview.
Right.
Tells a very interesting story about in Tibet how the lamas and the shamans make the separation between what one does and what the other does. So, yeah.
So, so basically we have, I guess, how many people were in your book? There was...
There were 24 altogether.
24?
Mm-hmm.
And many of the people represented here have written books. They give courses, some, like, I think John Perkins sponsor trips to Peru, is that right? Is he still doing
I believe
that?
John does ones to Ecuador.
Ecuador, okay.
Yeah, his organization does, yep.
Right. So there are many, many different traditions here that are very interesting. But I think anybody reading this book would find the similarities in the practices of the shamans from all over the world come down to, you know, just a few principles involving letting go of your personal story, focusing your intent, learning to listen to spirit, letting go of the past, quit worrying about the future. Mm-hmm. Anything I forgot?
Well, there's so much, but yeah, that's a good overview, I would say. Definitely a good overview.
Yeah. Well, we've been talking with Hillary Webb, Traveling Between Worlds, and we thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And if you would care to give your contact information once more?
Sure, absolutely. My website is www.hillarysweb.com, and you can also reach me through my email, hillary@hillarysweb.com, and I'd love to hear from anybody who wants to share their story or any thoughts that they have. I love to hear from people, so I invite that.
Well, thank you, and... this has been Temple of Health Radio Show. Next week we have the Astrological Karma of the United States, which should be an interesting talk given what's happened since September. And we'll see if he has any advice to give us. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.